Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
They have this panther sound effect that is just the cheesiest, stupidest sounding thing. Big voice guy going, "Panther goal scored by Sam Reinhart."
Where'd you get that thing?
I trapped it. Been keeping it in my bathroom at the motel, feeding it old pizza.
It's Mike Shope.
If you're calm, that wondrous big cat will be calm too. But if you're scared, that beautiful death machine will do what God made it to do, namely, eat you with a smile on its face.
And the Bulldog. On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Betting any tennis today?
I am not. No.
You're not touching no. My boys' match?
I haven't. I haven't been in the app. I mean, I was in Canada. No, nothing doing there.
No.
At least if there's a way to do it.
By the way.
To get out of the habit, I'm sort of out of the habit for a little while.
Okay.
I'll get back in eventually.
Michael Antonius, yeah. Buffalo's rising star in tennis.
Even though he's from Buffalo, we're allowed to bet on him?
Yes. He's actually born in New York City. But he is playing in the men's qualifiers at the U.S. Open. And this is so cool. He's playing Kei Nishikori today, who was in the finals in 2014, got to fifth in the world. And a buddy of mine told me that Nishikori, who was 36, has already announced this is his last Open, maybe his last tournament. I don't know. It's the end of the slam season.
Mm-hmm.
And how about it if our 16-year-old prodigy
takes him out?
He's a slight underdog, Michael.
It's like Arthur Motes knocking Brett Favre out of game with the Vikings.
That's when you know you've made it, when they can bet on you legally. Chris Mack, who I got to know a little bit from the betting space back in the BetQL days. I know Chris filled in for Nick Kostos at You Better You Bet. And I'm not sure if Chris has been on our show. Maybe not recently, I think, Chris. What do you remember about
this? It's been a while, yeah. But okay. Good to be back.
Thank you for today.
Hi, welcome back. Yeah.
Steelers and Bills tomorrow. We'll just keep it on the betting theme. What do you think of the Steelers at 8.5 wins this year?
I think they're very tight to the over. I just think when you've got this much veteran experience on the roster, as long as it stays mostly healthy, it's basically a very similar team to what you had last year, and they squeezed out 10 wins, right? Even if we want to, talk about a Tyler Loop field goal away or missed field goal away from missing the playoffs and being a 9-win team. And you added just a little bit more offensive skill position talent. They went out and traded for Michael Pittman Jr. And obviously, they bring in Jeremy Bernard, who right now is on the borderline as the third or fourth wide receiver. I do think there are some injury concerns and some other issues in the secondary that are worth keeping an eye on. But, it's the annual, story of the Steelers, guys. It's like we're just playing the record over and over and over again. They're about a 9-ish win team. And if some things break their way, maybe they win 10. If things don't break their way, if Aaron Rodgers ends up looking like a 43-year-old quarterback by the end of the year and injuries or other things catch up to them, or Mike McCarthy forgets how to coach offense, which so far it doesn't look like he has, then maybe they're an 8-win team. But I would definitely lean tight to the over, but over the 8.5.
Are they going to keep all four quarterbacks?
So here's where I was on this until Friday night, when I thought my 13-year-old son was going to fall asleep in the seat next to me at Heinz Field. I'll never call it Acrisure Stadium, by the way. I refuse to call it that. It's always Heinz Field to me.
You're safe here.
Okay, good. Thank you. My safe space in Buffalo, Western New York. I appreciate that. So until Friday night, I would have said, yes, absolutely. They're going to keep all four. After all, Mike McCarthy was brought in not because he's a yinzer just like us and grew up watching the Steelers and all that, but because he has a track record of developing quarterbacks, and they had a young one on the roster already in Will Howard when they hired McCarthy, and then they went out and drafted another one in Drew Aller. So I would have said, yes, absolutely. Mike McCarthy loves young quarterbacks, but has also been told, hey, we've got to try and still get to the playoffs now and have a winning record. So you've got to keep a veteran backup to Aaron Rodgers on the roster and Mason Rudolph. I do have some questions now, just based on the fact that Will Howard's two interceptions that he threw Friday night against the Jets were both really ugly, guys. And if that is enough to give you the opportunity to maybe sneak him through the waiver wire and onto the practice squad, then maybe they roll the dice on that and try it. I just look at quarterback depth charts around the league, and I see at least a few, if not a handful, where they would go, Will Howard didn't look great this preseason, but maybe we'll bring him in as a third quarterback anyway. So I don't know what the Steelers' risk desire is on dangling Will Howard out there. I would still think that they are going to do what they can to keep all four in the system, even if it means trying to dangle Will Howard out there and get him onto the practice squad. But they want to, you know, they want to compete this year, which obviously means Rodgers and having a veteran backup behind him in Rudolph, who they trust, and then hopefully be able to develop the other two going forward. So I would still lean towards them, keeping all four, as long as it doesn't create a crunch in another spot on the roster.
With Chris Mack, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here on WGR. Let's talk about McCarthy for another minute here, Chris. I wonder sometimes if he doesn't get a level of respect that he's earned for whatever reason. Yeah. I mean, it went south in Green Bay, Tyler Dunn's piece, you know, and just how much personality discord there seemed to be there with Rodgers also, of course, on the scene. And then Dallas, I mean, in Dallas, you talked about whether he can coach offense. Those offenses were pretty good with Dallas. Yeah. That doesn't last. And now he's in Pittsburgh. How do you sort of put his career to this point anyway in perspective?
I think he's a really good offensive coach, guys. And I think just like you said, there is a level of disrespect that people have for Mike McCarthy because, you know, he's just this big yinzer, you know, drops his consonants and elongates his vowels and talks like he's from Greenfield and da-da-da. You know, I think there's a certain amount of people that look at him and say, oh, well, yeah, he's just a yinzer football guy, you know. But he is. He's a good offensive coach. I think you saw it in that first preseason game. For what it's worth, it's a preseason game. Everything's taken with a grain of salt. But he made Rudolph, Howard, and Aller in that first preseason game look fantastic. I mean, he was drawing things up so that receivers were coming open right where they were looking for them. And I think that's what McCarthy is capable of at his best, is tailoring an offense and a passing attack specifically to exactly what a quarterback is able to do. And I think he's still got that skill. I don't think you'll lose that. And so that, I think you're exactly right. You're spot on. People look at McCarthy and think, oh, that's the guy that, you know, had a losing record in his first season in Green Bay, a losing record in his first season in Dallas, went out with a whimper in both places as well. Maybe he's not quite the guy, but I think this is exactly what the Steelers offense needs, is somebody to come in and give them an identity. And that, if nothing else, is what they'll have, I believe, under Mike McCarthy, an identity that says, hey, we're going to run the ball, even if we're not ripping off 10-yard carries. That happened in both of the preseason games to this point. I take more from it in the first one because they weren't running the ball well, but they kept plugging away and running the ball to give the offense a sense of balance so that the quarterbacks could continue with the play-action game. And I think that's something that this offense under, you know, Arthur Smith or Matt Canada or Randy Fietner or any of the litany of guys since we were at the tail end of the Ben Roethlisberger era, did not have. He'll give them that identity, which I think is important because with this defense, if you get just a modicum of efficiency on offense, you should be that 10-win team that they were last year.
Arthur Smith, right? That happened. it's sort of how the Bears were for me. Although, I mean, Roethlisberger happened, and he was there, of course, for a long time and was great. The Bears, with Caleb Williams, it's just really the cognitive dissonance there. Like imagining the Bears being fun, right? I mean, throwing the ball for real numbers and
having a creative offensive coach.
Yeah, like right. That stat about whoever the guy, Morris, whoever the guy is like their all-time receiving leader, and he had like 800 career yards or some. Just like you can't imagine, you can't see the Bears. And I have a little bit of this with the Steelers. Like, it's Arthur Smith, like, yes, perfect, four tight ends. I mean, just what are they going to look like? I wonder if Pittsburgh, again, this really depends on Rodgers, of course, largely, but he just got rid of the ball so fast last year, and I don't know. I wonder if there can be Metcalf. I mean, that's a big big, you know, star at that position, and Pittman, and maybe the rookie Bernard a little bit. Can we expect the Steelers to open it up, I guess, is my long-winded question in the end.
No, I think it's a great question if you're looking at the Steelers from the outside looking in. And I think using the tight ends that, for whatever reason, you know, we joke about Arthur Smith wanting to put six tight ends on the field. And, you know, he at times tried to force it last year, right? They brought in Jonnu Smith, and at times they lost sight of the fact that they have a guy who's being paid like a top 10, top 15 tight end in the league, Pat Freiermuth. And then they go out and give Darnell Washington, who's just a massive mountain of a man, an extension this offseason and still has a whole lot more ceiling to explore, I think. And so what we saw, again, it's a preseason game. I hate to draw so many conclusions from one preseason game, but what we saw in that first preseason game was, oh my God, they're using guys in the middle of the field, which did not happen with Arthur Smith or the two other guys I mentioned previous to him. They were almost afraid to use the middle of the field, which may have been more of a Mike Tomlin thing towards the end, where he wanted the games to be about mitigating turnovers as much as anything else. And so I think you're going to see not just the receivers, and Pittman and Metcalf are both built because of their size and their physicality to run routes through the middle of the field, but also with those tight ends, Freiermuth and Washington, you're going to see them use the middle of the field. So not necessarily opening up the game in like the traditional way that we think of it, like, oh, they're going to take deep shots like they did a couple of years ago where it was just chuck and duck to George Pickens and hope that he comes down with the ball or a DPI. I think it's going to be more about spreading things out, using the middle of the field with those tight ends and both of those top two wide receivers. And that's what, at this point, after the last half decade, will pass for opening up the offense here in Pittsburgh. And I think people are going to be delighted to see it because it hasn't happened. It's been so much dink and dunk and keep it outside the hashes that utilizing that middle of the field, really, when you've got a quarterback in Rodgers who still does have the arm strength, and you're thinking about the future and maybe a Drew Aller who we know has the mobility and the arm strength, you start to think, okay, maybe we can build something here with receivers who are allowed to run routes all over the field and actually be utilized.
Chris Mack, Pittsburgh radio host on the Western Hotline with us, Steelers in town to play the Bills tomorrow evening. How about the backfield? How do you think the workload will be doled out there? I feel like mostly since Jaylen Warren got there, it was frustrating for fans that he didn't get the ball more. There was always somebody ahead of him. He was like a complimentary piece. But now he's the top dog. Is there going to be a timeshare there, or do you think he'll be like a true 1A?
I think it's going to be probably pretty close to 50-50. I think they're going to – I think Warren, from what we've seen so far, is probably the 1A to Rico Dowdle's 1B. And I think they're going to take that as it comes and see if a guy has a hot hand on a particular day. It is going to be curious to me to see how they handle the lack of receiving options out of the backfield. Not that Warren can't do it or that Dowdle can't do it in some measure, but you're coming off a year where Kenneth Gainwell was the team MVP last year. And it's because every time Rodgers got in trouble, he knew he could dump it off to Gainwell. Hopefully the offensive line steps up and doesn't create a situation where Rodgers is constantly looking to dump the ball off again. But neither Warren nor Dowdle is really a Kenny Gainwell type back where they're going to be out there on third down constantly. So I am curious to see how that part of it gets divvied up. I think in early downs, it's going to be close to a true 50-50 with maybe Warren leaning a little bit more towards the third down and passing situations kind of guy. But they like Dowdle because he's got the ability to run up and down the line. He can take it up inside. He can bounce it outside. And really the same with Warren. You know, I've compared him for the last couple of years. It's like trying to tackle a bowling ball covered in razor blades. The dude, nobody wants to get in the way of Jaylen Warren once he gets going downhill. If he can also be that option out of the backfield, catching the ball on third downs and other situations like that, then I think they'll have a pretty good, 55-45 kind of split between the two.
How about look at Bulldog? Almost like a fantasy sounding question there with the backfield, the workload, timeshare, all that
stuff. Don't draft either one. I don't think either
really?
One is a fantasy back.
Okay. Well, I'll take a note of that.
I'll pull my weight.
Chris, what about the AFC North? Everybody, you're in the betting space, like I said. Everybody loves Baltimore mm-hmm. like it's the law every year, no matter yeah. what. I mean, there they are as the favorite again. They're the favorite in the AFC to get the one seed, I saw. But Cincinnati's over here with they're being favored in 15 out of 17 games. Like, this division, Pittsburgh's consistency has been, we've been reminded of it in this conversation. Do you think there's, you know, enough cracks maybe in the Ravens and the Bengals for the Steelers to win out?
I don't think they're, I'll put it this way. If Joe Burrow is healthy and the Bengals defense is just middle of the road, it doesn't even have to be good. It just has to not be the worst defense in the AFC. Then I really like the Bengals to win the division. I don't understand the love affair with the Ravens. I've been saying it all summer. I feel like a broken record, but losing Tyler Linderbaum is huge for that offensive line. And now you've lost Danny Pinter as well. He's done for the year after he had kind of taken over pole position for replacing Linderbaum. You're down to a couple of guys who are somewhat dinged up behind him and splitting snaps and reps and practices and preseason games. I think that's going to be a major Achilles heel for them this year. And I'm not calling a Derrick Henry drop-off, but it's going to happen eventually when we least expect it. Maybe this year is the year. So I don't like the Ravens to win the AFC. I don't like the Ravens to win the division. I wouldn't be surprised if the Ravens miss the playoffs again. I don't think they're going to be bad, but I think they're going to be right there along that 9-10 win cut line in the AFC. And I do think if the Bengals, like I said, stay healthy and their defense is just somewhat upgraded, they're the team to beat, not just in this division, but I think it vaults them right up there with the Bills as the team to beat in the AFC. So that's how I would handicap the AFC North. I would look at it as it could still be a three-team playoff division, depending on how things fall. You could get the Steelers and the Ravens in there as wild cards, but I personally am a big fan of what the Bengals did in upgrading their defense. Again, no one's going to confuse it with a Pro Bowl defense, but they went out and did enough to bolster what was the worst defense in the conference last year, that if they are just middle of the road, that offense is going to score a ton of points if Joe Burrow stays healthy. Chase Brown, I think, is going to have another growth year on top of what he had last year in the backfield. And then you got Chase, you got Higgins, Yoshivas, all the weapons available at Burrow's disposal. I don't know why they're not garnering more hype this offseason.
I'm with you on the Bengals. I think the Dexter Lawrence acquisition was massive.
Yeah.
And yeah, I've been almost saying the exact same thing the same way you just did. Like, the defense is respectable, like middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. That offense could be incredible. The one little piece there is, like, Joe Burrow sounds like, I don't know, sad isn't really a great way to talk about a football player, but like, he often sounds like a little bit sad, like, if not now, when kind of thing. And I feel like that could create a pressure point there. The Bengals, I don't know how aware this current crop of players would be of the team's history, but they have a history of sort of not doing enough. And I sort of feel like they could be at a breaking. Burrow sounds to me like he's as close to being at the Carson Palmer break glass in case of emergency, get me the F out of here, as maybe he's ever been.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I think you're absolutely right. Like, I don't think they need to have a rough couple of weeks for there to be pressure on the organization, on Zach Taylor. Like, they can't miss the playoffs again. If they do, Zach Taylor is done. If they do, Joe Burrow is going to do more than just seem chagrined in post-game press conferences. He's going to get to the point where, like you said, he's going to consider going the Carson Palmer route and saying, hey, can you please send me somewhere where I can actually get back to a Super Bowl and maybe win one? And I think, you know, given the history of the Bengals organization, whether you're old enough to remember how futile the Bengals have been for most of our lifetimes or not, they owe it to Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and all those other big names that I mentioned a couple minutes ago to do more with what they have. And that's going to fall on Zach Taylor. If somehow they miss the playoffs, I don't see how he survives. And I think it could create a massive offseason of upheaval for the Bengals. So they're definitely, totally agree, massive amounts of pressure on that organization to get back to the playoffs this year.
Just a couple of more minutes with Chris Mack. Chris, might you have a couple of futures plays in the NFL that you think are interesting?
So I haven't dialed in on teams specifically yet, but I will tell you one that has jumped out to me just through the first couple of weeks of the preseason as far as a player prop. If for those listening, if you're able to get that, I love a couple of guys for Offensive Rookie of the Year. And the one I don't think is going to be too surprising. It's not the names at the top of the list, although I do like Jeremiah Love in Arizona, if he can stay healthy. I think he's going to get a ton of carries. I don't think Fernando Mendoza is probably going to get inserted as starter soon enough in Vegas to really make some noise in that market. The names that I like are the next tiers down. Dejon Stribling, the wide receiver in San Francisco. I think Mike Evans is 75 years old. So is Deebo Samuel. Ricky Pearsall's out for the year. Brock Purdy's got to have someone to throw the ball to. I know George Kittle might be back for week one, which is great news for Niners fans, considering the offseason they've had that's involved everything from electrical substations to trailer park prostitution stings at this point. But Dejon Stribling, I could see having a massive rookie year. So I like him. And then I know people are going to laugh at this, but I've been standing by him since last fall when I finally came around on him. Carson Beck, if he gets a chance to start the majority of the games in Arizona, Arizona is not going to be good. I want to be real clear about that. Don't go betting the Cardinals. I think they'll be lucky to win five games. But I think with the number of weapons around him between Harrison and just the receiving talent right. they have, Trey McBride at tight end, I mentioned Jeremiah Love already. They got a deep backfield. If the offensive line can keep Carson Beck clean, just a little clean, I think Carson Beck, if he gets to start 10, 12 more games than that, could be a look at Offensive Rookie of the Year too at like 20 or 25 to 1. Those are the ones that I've really sort of honed in on right now.
Yeah, the prices have to be pretty good on both of those guys. I wonder if Beck, just like not to the same extent as with MVP, but if he's going to win, like win games to win the award. You know, like how
– Yeah.
Right? Maybe?
That's what would – I think quarterback always gets a little bit more leeway, you know, but I do think you're right. Like if the Cardinals are 3-14, it doesn't matter if Carson Beck looks good and puts up numbers in those games, they're still 3-14. And if the Niners, you know, are a wild card team and Dejon Stribling has, you know, 85 catches and 10 touchdowns, that would definitely be my lean there in that market. And one that, you know, the price is a lot shorter in that market, but Jadarian Price is going to get a ton of work in Seattle. And I think that's a team that's obviously, you know, coming off a Super Bowl. I still think they're going to be really good.
I would have liked Jordan Tyson, but his hamstring.
Yeah.
But he's had four hamstring injuries now, and he's going to miss maybe at least a month of the season. So probably not going to win. Okay, Chris, thanks for your time today. Anything you want to promote?
Yeah, I'll be filling in for Nick Costos the rest of this week on You Better You Bet on Westwood One Sports every morning from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern, so check it out. And if you're looking for a fix of Steelers news, trying to find out what's going on with them going into this final preseason game, by all means, check out Cabali and Mac. Mark Cabali's been on the Steelers beat for about 20 years now. He and I have a podcast you can get wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you, Chris. Enjoy the season.
Thanks so much, guys. You too.
Chris Mack, our guest on the Wester Hotline, the Steelers in town to play the Bills in the preseason finale tomorrow. 803-0550 for us. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Sal Capaccio booked for 5 today. This is WGR.